because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Ice summary of this week in the Capitol. On November 4, the voters had their say. A few days, 1 week later, legislators meet and pick their leaders. J.R., let's talk about the new leadership team. Let's start with Assembly Republicans. No surprise, Speaker Voss, not challenged for Speaker.
No, I mean, expanded to 63. What would you have to gripe about at this point?
Right. And Tyler August will come back as Speaker pro tem.
Again, nobody opposed him.
Right. Then let's look at Jim Steinke now is the MAJ leader, the majority leader.
Interesting. And that's always about who did the most during the elections, helped their colleagues, if you will. Steinke led Legipalooza, which is what Republicans call their effort to go out in the districts and knock on doors. So if you're in a safe district, they want you to go work in a contested one,
right,
help out. That was a big plus for Steinke. Interesting, Andre Jacques, look at his campaign finance report. He donated some pretty decent dollars to other lawmakers trying to, like, build up some support, if you will, for run. Didn't get it. Then Joan Baalbek was the third one. A lot of times it's a matter of who did the most for other members, who's perceived to be the most in line philosophically, if you will.
Right.
And then sometimes, occasionally, there's a thing of, well, do we want to have a check and balance, if you will, on the speaker, somebody who will stand up and say, here's a different perspective, if you will.
So. And then assistant leader Dan Knodel. Now, he was removed from leadership at one point. Is he out of the doghouse?
Well, you go back to the election a couple of years ago, and there was always, again, perception of there was a big influx, if you will, of freshmen and sophomores.
Yes.
Now, again, another big influx of new members this session as well. But
18.
Go back 2 years ago, and all of a sudden the freshmen and sophomores like, hey, you know, we're feeling our oats a little bit. We want somebody who's one of our own,
right,
kind of thing. So that may play a little bit part of what that race was last time, because Steinke was assistant this past session, if I remember correctly, and this is, you know, 2 years ago now, but I think he beat out Knodel in that election 2 years ago for that spot. And again, he was a sophomore at the time, part of that big influx, so that may play a part of it.
Well, let's look at the balance of the GOP leadership team. John Murtha and Lee Nerison and Jesse Rodriguez. When you look at Steinke, August, Knodel, Murtha, Nerison, and Rodriguez, is it fair to say this is not a team? This is a team that's going to be content letting Speaker Voss lead in talks with the Gov and Senator Fitzgerald?
Well, if you go back to when Kramer was elected, before he was deposed, not that long after that, but one of Kramer's big bonuses or perceived bonuses was, well, this is a guy who might stand up to Robin once in a while and say, hey, you know,
is this really wise?
Yes.
Should we really do this?
Robin, though, is very much in charge of that caucus. The bigger challenge for him is how are they going to keep them all together at times and not get him too out in front, if you will, the governor, on certain issues. It'll be interesting to watch. But, yeah, very much it's Robin is the one who runs that caucus at this point.
The Senate GOP, no surprise that Senator Scott Fitzgerald comes back as the leader. You surprised that Senator Paul Farrell was named his assistant?
No. Paul, again, you know, southeastern Wisconsin, pretty good base there. So well-liked, so it made sense.
But you just you were just saying he made another decision yesterday. Talk about that.
Well, he's running for county executive now. Now this popped up a week after the election for leadership position. So,
right.
And from what I heard, the rumor was that Varrock has been making calls early this week, you know, Monday-ish. So he wouldn't have known at the time that this was going to open up.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, now you know there's a possibility of one part of the leadership team leaving to go for that office if he wins everything come spring.
Well, and we'll have the first woman president since senators decided to elect the president, and Senator Mary Lassick will be the president.
Yes, beat out Petrosky. Let's say was going to make a run for it at one point, but in the end, it put his name in. One interesting thing about Lassick, by becoming president, she opens up the spot on finance, so
yes,
you don't know if that played a role in how people perceived that race because people want to be on finance, you know. I mean, credit to her for winning it, but also it opens up a prime spot on the committee to be on in the legislature.
How do you think she'll be president different from Ellis and Risser and so all the others?
Well, it'll be interesting to watch. You know, Ellis was always perceived to be the person who was, if you will, backstop to certain things, that he controlled a certain number of members and would either water things down or push a different priority. He wasn't always on the same page as Fitzgerald at times.
Mm-hmm.
Will Lassick be that kind of a president or be more somebody who is a team, if you will, with Fitzgerald? That's something to watch.
And, okay, the rest of the Senate, the GOP leadership team, Senator Sheila Harsdorf and Van Wongard, elected, turned out of office, he's now welcome back with a leadership job.
Yeah, but it's not a heavy lifting job. So, but Fitzgerald, interesting, you know, one of the things about Lozick is she's not perceived to be a more moderate lawmaker like Ellis was.
Right.
She's much more in tune with the southeastern Wisconsin conservative kind of ideology
right.
that she and Fitz share. So that's another thing.
You mentioned Senator Leah Vukmir. She didn't run for anything. Neither did Frank Lassay. Why not?
Leah, for sure, wants to be on joint finance. That's where I think she wants to end up.
Okay.
Now, here's the interesting thing about finance now. So you've got, you assume, so Darling will come back as chair, we assume right now.
Mm-hmm.
Harsdorff's on there and Olson's on there. There mm-hmm. have been people who want to see Olson removed because he broke with the caucus on a few things. But I'm not sure that's going to happen just yet. So let's just assume for now we have three spots to fill.
Yeah.
All right? You have... due to an ideological balance and a geographical balance. So you've got Alberta from southeastern Wisconsin. You could do two more from southeastern Wisconsin, theoretically, and then fill the other two spots with people from out state. Still have three and three, if you will, three from southeastern, three out state.
Okay.
So how's that going to work out?
I understand, but I want to come back to that debate later. Let's finish out the caucus discussions. Senate Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Senator, they had been led by Chris Larson of mm-hmm. Milwaukee. But he handpicked Pat Bomhack on the 17th against the Ernie, the old line candidate. Clear to me and clear to you, he didn't have the vote, so he decided, okay, we're going to elect Senator Jennifer Schilling. You want to talk about Larson's exit,
sure.
graceful or no?
Exit graceful, yes. He did the smart and the gracious thing in bowing out rather than forcing an election. Also saved himself some face. I mean, they have any face his colleagues in the upshort, because what we hear, and now I'm not counting heads to know for sure, but the feeling was he was not going to have the votes, the eight votes needed to win that office.
Right.
But the complaints about Larson go well beyond what happened with the 17th. If you go back this past session with him in charge, there were questions about message. Was he a great messenger on the floor? That was held against him at times. Go back even before that. The election 2 years ago for minority leader, he beat out John Erpenbach in a very contentious election that left a rift in the caucus, not really healed since then at times. Now you fast forward to candidate recruitment this spring. They want to go after Jerry Petroski up in the Wausau area, Terry Moulton, Chippewa Falls. Those candidates have not really materialized. Now it was a bad year overall for Democrats, but the foundation wasn't there to even challenge those guys back then. They got a good candidate in the ninth for the open seat, well, it became an open seat. Against then Libum, then Lemahue. Good recruitment there. Penny Bernard Schaefer fell in his lap, if you will, in the 19th. That was a good candidate recruitment.
Yep.
Gone southwest from Wisconsin, it was a mess from day one. They weren't happy with Ernie. They then recruited somebody running that race. It was supposed to raise a lot more money because Ernie wasn't raising money. Pat Bomhack didn't raise money. Then it became a resentment of this guy was forced on us by Madison.
Right.
It was just it was a circus pretty much.
Well, let's talk about the new Senate Democratic leader, Jennifer Schilling. She came to the Assembly in 2001. Mm-hmm. She takes out Dan Kopanky in a recall election because Kopanky voted for Act 10. She has a different style. Do you think she'll get along better with Senator Fitzgerald?
Possibly. She's much more congenial with you, if you will, or kind of much more, I guess she's not as confrontational, I guess is a better word, than what Larson has been with Fitzgerald. She's been in the legislature longer than he has. Larson came in 2010, remember. So there's that thing going on. Schilling did not go out of state because she was in the Assembly at the time.
Right.
Chris Larson did. So there's all these kind of factors that may play to a little bit better relationship. But, you know, Schilling also talks about the Cooley temperament, the Cooley, you know, sensibility, if you will, that region in the La Crosse area. So there's that going for her. Another thing, she's been on finance. She knows, if you watch her on finance, she knows how to make a point without like trying to basically throw a tantrum, if you will.
Yeah.
So those kinds of things, you kind of see that what style she may have.
She's not from the top three media markets, not mm-hmm. from Green Bay, not from Milwaukee, not from Madison. Is that a liability?
No, because Democrats, their problem is not Madison and Milwaukee. Their problem is outstate.
Okay.
If they're ever getting back the majority, they have to figure out a way to talk to voters in Chippewa Falls, in the Wausau area. These places they're not doing well in right now, that's the key for them. So having somebody from outstate is not a liability in that regard. So long as she's a good messenger and raises money. Being minority leader is about, one, carrying a message on the floor that's cohesive to say this is our alternative, and two, raising money and candidate recruitment for the next election to have a chance to win it back. Now, 2016 is not going to be a great year seat-wise for Democrats. If you look at the map, Their best shot's going to be in the Rick Gudeck seat. That one was separated by the top of the ticket by 12 votes, or sorry, by several hundred votes. Mm-hmm. He beat Jessica King by 600, I think it was, 2 years ago. So that's their top one. But beyond that, there aren't really close seats on either side. You know, Dave Hansen's one, a Democrat, that could be contested, but otherwise, it's not a very good map.
What intrigues me about Senate Democrats is 7 of the 14 are women. Mm-hmm. Let's just quickly run them down. Bewley, Harris Dodd, Taylor, Schilling, Lassa, Feinhout, Janice Ringhan. Senator Schilling said women have a different leadership style. Is that true?
It depends. You know, it's hard to label all leaders because of their gender. You know, I've seen ones who are great and not so great, not because of their gender, but because of their style. So maybe she brings, maybe she's talking about bringing a more sensibility, a softer touch. I don't know, but we'll see. I mean, it is going to be a test for her of how she does with this. And oh, by the way, don't forget, there's a congressional seat in her district that in 2 years, Russ Feingold might run for the U.S. Senate. If he doesn't, we all know Ron Kind wants to. Will Jen Schilling have that in the back of her mind about, you know, running for Congress in 2 years? That's another thing to kind of, the dynamic, if you will, to her being in this
prediction,
position.
Prediction, Feingold runs. But anyway, moving along to it.
It's not a very tough one, is it?
No, it isn't. Let's talk about Assembly Dems. Peter Barca is challenged by a second-term Evan Goyke out of Milwaukee, a lawyer. I don't know how close it was. You know those votes are secret. Your thoughts on Goyke's challenge?
A couple things. One, I was surprised that Barca survived. Not take Evan out of the picture first. It's a results-oriented business. They lost seats this time. They had President Obama top of the ticket 2 years ago and didn't pick up any seats. They're not in that great a shape right now. So from that regard, it's tough to see how Peter survived. But if you look at the overall effort by Assembly Dems in 14, they were better run campaign-wise. They raised more money in their key seats, had a better candidate recruitment than what they did 2 years ago. The issue here, though, is Evan Goyke was not the perfect kind of alternative, if you will. He's just finishing his first term from Milwaukee. Fair or not, and this is not a fair business, his dad's a lobbyist.
That's true.
Dad's a lobbyist
who got
in trouble for reimbursing
more
employees.
More than 10 principles.
Yeah. Got in trouble for reimbursing employees for donations like 20 years ago.
A long time ago.
But
memories.
This is not a fair business. And that'll always be held against Evan if he was leader that, well, your dad's a lobbyist, you know, are you in his pocket kind of thing. Who's really running the show? So I got the sense from freshmen and sophomores that they wanted a change, but they weren't sure that this was the right change to make. So other issue for Democrats is this. Just like in the Senate, their problem is not Milwaukee and Madison, southeastern Wisconsin or Dane County. They need to figure out outstate how to do well in Chippewa Falls, that they should be winning seats up there, places like that, so they need to have a better message going forward for rural voters.
But the next generation of Assembly Democrats did get, is it fair to call it a consolation prize when Katrina Shanklin was elected as Barca's assistant. Now, she's only 27 years old. Mm-hmm. She's finishing her first term.
Yes.
Isn't she going to push Barca in some ways that challenge his traditional leadership styles, J.R.?
Possibly. What's interesting is Democrats are becoming more and more condensed, if you will, in the urban areas. There aren't many rural Dems anymore. Chris Dano from Trempealeau County, can you name any more than that? Steve Doyle from Onalaska. It's, you know, the way the maps are drawn, it kind of sets them up that they're mostly confined to urban areas, you know, the safe Eau Claire seat, safe Green Bay seat, those kinds of things.
Beth Myers, Ashland, she's rural area.
Yep, but not many.
Okay.
So, again, the power's focused in Dane and Madison and Milwaukee. That's an issue they got to deal with.
Well, okay, let's talk about that. So leading Assembly Democrats, Representative Barca, Representative Shanklin, and Annie Jorgensen stays as caucus chair.
But I think those freshmen, they're more progressive, sophomores more progressive. They've either come because of the Act 10 fight. They were inspired by it, much like the Republicans.
Okay.
Reaction to it. They want to be more progressive. To talk to those rural voters, they have to be sometimes more moderate.
Yeah.
How are they going to walk that line?
Okay, now let's come back to Let's Play. Because the members of finance haven't been announced yet, you and I can play guessing games. So let's come back to it. There's no doubt that Senator Darling is going to come back. I would expect Senator Harsdorf. And as you mentioned, Senator Olson potentially.
There's going to be talk about Luther because there are people unhappy about Common Core and how he handled it this session. But I think the betting money right now is he'll come back.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to throw out a name. Would you consider Howard Markline showing up there as a CPA on finance?
That name's been mentioned. Now, the tough thing for him is he's a freshman, or will be a freshman, starting in January. He's also from a bad district for the month number-wise. When you're in finance, you take a lot of bad votes. do you take more bad votes on finance than you do on the floor of the chamber?
Okay.
So 4 years from now, when he runs for election again, we assume he would,
okay.
That's that much more fodder to go after him in 4 years. So that's one consideration to think about.
Humor me. I'm going to add Paul Farrell, but now you're subtracting him, and you're, instead of Farrell, you're saying Senator Leah.
Leah said, point blank, I want to be on finance. So that's something to consider. Again, the southeastern Wisconsin and outstate balance, Leah's going to be a candidate. Paul told me yesterday flat out, if I run, you know, okay. I'm passing up finance essentially, because he doesn't think Fitz would want to break the continuity of the committee if he won that. Plus, he'd also be kind of distracted, wouldn't he, for the first 3-4 months of the year running for another office while
the
budget.
Yeah, when you're into the actual heart of the budget. Well, now let's continue our fun game, Assembly Republicans on finance.
Well, don't forget Senate Republicans. Tom Tiffany has said, I want to be on finance. I'm a Northwoods lawmaker. We need geographical balance.
Okay.
Might they go up there? Might they go to a Terry Moulton?
Okay.
Out from, or even a Petrosky? You know, there's going to be a balance, if you'll, geographically. Who's going to fill the spots?
Okay, now let's talk about the Assembly side. Obviously, we know John Nygren.
Mm-hmm.
Coinga comes back. By the way, do you expect Dale Coinga to run for Waukesha County Exec?
Good question. He said he's interested in it. So, and what does that do? Does that have any impact on what he does with finance? I mean, he's also, you know, considered a possibly for vice chair. Could he serve in that spot while he's also running for another office? So something to kind of keep an eye on.
And Knudsen, I put him back on finance.
Yes.
Remember, he challenged Kramer at one point for the number two job.
Yes.
Majority leader.
Yeah.
And my nominee is Amy Loudenbeck. Have you
heard
that
lock.
Name? She's a lock.
Everybody I've talked to says she's a lock. She was a candidate for the appointment last time.
Right.
Put in the work this election cycle for Republicans, so she is almost a lock. It was two spots then, we believe, to be filled.
Okay. Democrats will get four slots. Here are two names. I think Corey Mason comes back out of Racine.
Unless he runs for county executive, will that have an impact on, you know, again,
man, you're dumping on all my names. Go ahead. That's all right.
Well, some Republicans think it's a couple more. There's two spots open. Think Chaya. Think Swearingen. Michael Schrau has said, I want to be on finance.
Okay, you're back on the GOPers.
So okay. Those guys, those two spots, you know, watch that. The difficult thing for Robin's going to be, a lot of people got the message this past year of, if you work hard, you will be rewarded. So now they want to be rewarded. So who's going to get, who did the most, essentially, get rewarded for those spots? But now back to the Assembly.
Back to the Dems. Nominate Mason. I didn't know there was a possibility he's looking at county exec.
That's been rumbled about for a while, you know, recently, because I think what's the last name of the guy? Ladwig, right?
Is he? Yeah,
county
Ladwig.
Exec?
Yeah. He's announced he's going to retire.
Go to a business group.
Right.
So Chris Taylor's name is mentioned quite a bit, lawmaker from Madison, because
I'm going to. Another Taylor. Lena Taylor was removed from finance by Chris Larson.
Mm-hmm.
You argue geography. I think you got to put Lena back on there, don't you?
With Democrats, there's always this pressure of our bases are Madison and Milwaukee, of taking care of your bases. So if you're talking about with Senate Dems first, your bases, you think Milwaukee's one. Well, Lena's got the experience. And part of being a minority on finance is not just voting no, but presenting a message. And oh,
playing
by the
offense.
Way, they know they're in such a small minority, they want to make it hurt along the way. And Lena is very, very good at making them go through the hoops to pass what they want to do.
Excruciating votes, yeah.
Very, you know, drives a message home every time, you know. She gets her 2 cents worth every time.
Okay, if I'm right and one of the Senate Dem seats go to Taylor, who do you pick for the other one?
You know, Kathleen Beinhout, by the way, dropped by the 1310 hearing on Wednesday just to watch. That
oh,
was kind of interesting.
Thank you.
John Erpenbach's name is mentioned as a possibility. You know, again, Madison and Milwaukee.
Okay.
But that'll be one of the first big kind of tests or indicators of Schilling's leadership. Where is she going to go for finance picks?
Okay. Okay, new topic. Days after he wins a second term, actually the third vote in 4 years, the governor, he interviews with the Wall Street Journal, goes to meet the press, and he leaves clearly the door open and run for president. Let's listen to what he told Chuck Todd on Meet the Press.
I got to ask you about 2016. You made a pledge in October that you were going to serve all 4 years. Does that pledge still hold?
I said my plan was for 4 years. I've got a plan to keep going for the next 4 years. But, you know, certainly I care deeply about not only my state but my country. We'll see what the future holds. I love Paul Ryan. I've said many times before I'd be the president of Paul Ryan Fan Club. But I do think if we're going to beat Hillary Clinton in the next election, we've got to have a message that says Hillary Clinton is all about Washington. Mm-hmm. I think in many ways she was the big loser on Tuesday because she embodies everything that's wrong with Washington. We offer a fresh approach. Any of us, now 31 governors across the country, have the executive experience from outside of Washington to provide a much better alternative to the old, tired, top-down approach so you see out of Washington, D.C. We need something fresh, organic, from the bottom up, and that's what you get in the states. Paul Rand may be the only exception to that rule, but overall, I believe governors make much better presidents than members of Congress.
Governor Scott.
Okay, now, J.R., you and I work out at the same YMCA, and so I'm on the machine last Sunday, and I hear Governor Walker say this, and I stop pedaling my exercise bike, because he says, he twice puts his finger in the eyes of Hillary Clinton. She's everything that's wrong with Washington, and if anything good comes out, and if any good presidential candidates, maybe Paul Ryan, but otherwise it should be a governor.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised at how widely he opened the door. Your reaction?
Oh, we've known this for a while. If he won re-election, he was going to put a toe in. I mean, this is part's happening now is the Afterglow tour. I mean, he got a big boost. Remember, there was a there were headlines a week before the election saying Walker stumbles toward 2016. All of a sudden, now he wins by whatever 5.5 points, and it's like the boost is back. So he's getting kind of the accolades right now, doing the victory lap. People are showing him all kinds of love, saying, "Oh, you got to in his ear, Governor. You got to look at this. You know, you really." Kind of, you did a good job. So he's talking about one. He's been actually talking about for a couple of years now that the best candidates are governors. That's where the reforms are happening. That's
31 Republican governors, et cetera, et cetera.
And I happen to be one of them. He's also been saying for a while that, you know, he poked an eye on Hillary even like a year ago, and that's why one of their group, her kind of her groups are like are big fans of hers. They've poked back at the governor over the last year or so. But anyway, he is definitely going to give it a look. All the signs are there now. In the end, he may not do it. You know. We'll see what kind of reaction he gets, but there's no doubt that he's put himself in position to be in the conversation. Where it goes from here is kind of up to him.
Okay, let's stay with this a little bit more because I want to talk about Paul Ryan. He now a good shot to being Ways and Means, the number one committee job in the entire U.S. House. So who goes first for governor, Scott Walker or Paul Ryan?
I've talked to a number of people about Paul Ryan and whether he wants to run for president, and the going thought seems to be that he doesn't really have he doesn't burn for the job. We talk in politics a lot about the fire in the belly, and I don't get the impression talking to folks that Paul Ryan has that fire to be president. You know, there are a number of reasons why. I mean, one, he's almost too smart to do it. He has all these ideas he wants to implement on the social net, Medicare, Social Security, on the line. They'll all come through Ways and Means. If he gets that committee position, he could have his imprint, if you will, in national policy and do that from there without putting his family through the fishbowl that is Washington, D.C., of the grind of a 22-month presidential election. And he's only 44 years old, by the way, 45 in January. He could create a record as 6 years as chair of Ways and Means, take some time off, go make some money, then come back and run. He'd still be in his early 50s looking at running for president. So, I mean, there's that option for him. And two, you know, presidential politics right now are basically like a knife fight, right? And Ryan's trying to have this kind of high-minded conversation about the nation's issues. I don't get the impression he wants to go to bare-knuckle brawl with Ted Cruz, you know, in Wintercrest, Iowa right now and do that kind of stuff.
Well, and also, former President Bush says 50-50 that Jeb's going to run. But, okay, enough on Governor Walker running for president. There's three other issues I want to touch on. Ryan Murray, number two at Wisconsin Economic Development Corp, announces he's leaving the cabinet.
Yep.
Well, he's not quite a cabinet secretary. What other likely changes in Governor Walker's lineup?
Good question. He's going to watch anybody in his inner circle, like in the governor's office itself. Did anybody leave? I mean, you know, it's been a grind. Keith Gilkes left as chief of staff, the first year? But part of that was because he went to run the reelection campaign for the recall. So will anybody leave from that inner circle? There's always some kind of like jostling, but one thing to watch with that is Walker's talking about a reorganization of state government. How will that go? What will it look like?
And will be in? Who will be out?
Yeah. And are they talking about rearranging deck chairs and like putting more stuff under DOA that Mike Hipsch has this even bigger empire as DOA secretary? Or are they talking about actually eliminating jobs and middle managers, those kinds of things? So that could have a huge role in what those.
Just a quick follow up. Does Reed Hall at WEDIC seem to you like he's a long termer?
I don't know what's long term. Yeah, that's a good question to me.
Beyond the next budget.
Good question.
Okay. Secondly, when are we going to get a transportation budget?
I think sooner rather than later.
Soon? Okay. Because there's a $600 million, $700 million shortfall. So that's going to unfold this way. The Secretary Gottlieb is going to make a recommendation. Just like 2 years ago, there was a task force, came up with ideas. Everybody walked away from the task force recommendations. So do you look for it pretty soon? And
yes.
Have you heard anything that's going to be in it?
I think it should be out actually next couple of days. From what I'm hearing, it should be out. It'll give us a little bit of a roadmap, but I don't think it's not going to answer the $650 million question about how they're going to fill this hole.
Okay.
I do think it's going to propose a certain number of things. We'll see what it says. I would guess that GPR transfers will be in there because they've been doing those already. But solving the big picture, I think that's going to come down the road a little bit.
Remember that trial balloon the governor floated? Let's put a sales tax on gasoline, get rid of the gas tax.
Mm-hmm.
I'm told that he could model the Virginia plan, which I haven't had a chance to look at. Finally, last piece of unfinished business. There's a casino that people want to build in Kenosha.
Yeah.
The governor has until February. How soon do you think we're going to see a decision on that?
Valentine's Day. The ad war is already heating up. I don't know if you've seen, but we have up
yes.
at our site a TV ad from the Pro Casino Group, the Miami Tribe, plus a radio ad they're running. Enough Already Wisconsin Group is already up with a radio ad opposed the casino.
Right.
So they're starting to put the screws down on the governor. I mean, we got 1 week break from campaign ads. Now it's issue ads about this. But I think he's going to take the full time, or close to it, full time to work on this.
Well, here's my question. If the governor needs some additional money to balance the 2015-2017 budget, could he approve the casino pretty quickly, then it gets built, then they start chipping in to the GPR Treasury by the second year of the next biennium?
Here's the problem, though. What happens to the Forest County Potawatomi Compact and the money they give to the state? Now, because their big issue, what Governor Walker's talked about, is they could create a $100 million hole to fill with them. So would the Hard Rock / Seminole / Menominee Tribe
right.
project, would it fill that hole and then some to make it worthwhile for the state? That's a big question. Plus, you have another question, the Bucks Arena. How are they going to finance that? Would they take, because right now we get money from, so when NBA players come to Wisconsin and play, they get taxed for even being here, right?
Because
right. they make money off of playing that
and
game.
And Speaker Voss put out a press release today, NBA players paid $10.7 million in state income taxes.
So it's small money in the big picture, but it's another piece of the pie.
That's true.
All these moving parts to deal with. And,
right.
you know, we should get, by 20th, we'll have revenue projections from DNOA for the next biennium
yes.
to kind of show what kind of issue we have. If you look at it, we had almost $1 billion more requested from DHS for medical assistance.
That's right.
$600-some million from DPI, which 20 years is not going to get through schools.
613, and Nygren and Voss say that's a non-starter. Excuse me.
Yes. So you start adding it up, and whatever DOT is going to add in, I'm going to guess there's going to be at least a $1.7, $1.8 billion in additional GPR requested. So we get that picture next Thursday. It's not going to be pretty. Now, I don't know the structural deficit. We talked about $1.8 billion. You know,
right.
that'll be off the table now. We'll have a new one. But it's not going to look great for the state going forward, the next budget, even with normal revenue growth. Not saying it's going to be horrible, but it's not going to be a great picture next Thursday.
But the last thing I think the governor said on the Kenosha Casino is, or maybe it was Secretary Hipsch's, they're trying to find a way to get to yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, is your stock picker taking the day off?
Taking
a
week
off. Or what?
It's been a long grind this election season, so we'll be back next week.
Back next week. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And that's Rewind. Thank you.